We're exploring how technology is being integrated on the farm here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. By 2050, we'll have almost 10 billion people to feed on our planet. Agricultural production will need to keep up in achieving high yields while also dramatically reducing the environmental impacts of conventional farming. And so advancements in new technologies continue to transform modern farming, from robotics and drones to computer vision software for driverless tractors. What technology have you invested in for your farm? Has the investment paid off, or was it a waste of money? Has tech made farming easier for you and freed up your time? We're at 800-642-1234. Lauren Stein is a contributing writer for the trade journal Ag Funder News. She raises cattle, sheep, and goats in Northwest Arkansas. Lauren, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. You were an attorney before becoming a farmer, and maybe I have a penchant for the obvious here, but those careers are very, very different from one another. What happened?
It was an interesting turn of events where I got a master's degree in food and agriculture law and policy. And as part of that degree, I wanted to start working on local farms just to get an idea of who my clients might be. And long story short, I fell in love with farming and said, this is something I want to do every single day. And I now teach at the University of Arkansas, where I got my master's of law from. So I'm still using my law degree to some extent. I drank the Kool-Aid and became a farmer.
Wow, you really got sucked into it. What was it about farming that you fell in love with?
I get that question quite a bit, and I have never come up with a really great answer. I can't put my finger on it. There's just so many aspects. It's different every day. I realize that I like being outside. I have a hard time being behind a desk for 12 hours a day. I love working with animals. There's a never-ending list of problems to solve, and for me, that's really rewarding and keeps me engaged.
Yeah, and you must really like using your hands as well and just digging into it.
Yes, it's a good workout. It's never hard to fall asleep at night.
Farming has changed so much over the generations, specifically with technology. What are you seeing out there? What are the technological advancements?
Yeah, so at Ag Funder News, we follow this any type of food or farming technology, and we put out reports every year that have a list of all the technologies and how much investment they're getting. There's been $19.8 billion invested in agri-food technology in 2019 alone. And it covers a broad range of categories. As far as on-farm technologies, there's some really big ones that are already reaching the farm and making a huge impact. And I think most farmers are probably familiar with farm management software. It's an idea where they put together algorithms and public data and data taken from your tractor, from sensors in your field, and they marry it all together and give you decision support. They try and interpret all this data much faster than we could if it was all printed out on a piece of paper and tell you, hey, you've got a problem coming up, or now's a good time to harvest, or this field has a little bit of pest pressure. And the farm management software, I think, has been very interesting to a lot of farmers, but it also has some tricky aspects. The problem is that there's over 100 different farm management software services out there right now. So Knowing which one's right for you can be really overwhelming.
Yeah. And so how do you end up choosing the software? And then do you have to stick with it for the long term?
Every service is a little bit different, as far as I can tell. And, in my work, I try and talk to as many farmers as I can. I talk to plenty of startups innovating this technology, plenty of venture capital firms, and they all want to say really great things about what they're doing. And I try and hunt for farmers who are very tech minded to tell me what works, what doesn't work, what they need, what they don't need. There's a pretty big disconnect sometimes between what happens in Silicon Valley and what's actually happening on the farm. And I think entrepreneurs are getting somewhat better at going out to where their technology will actually be used and talking to farmers as the end users. But sometimes, they get a little bit too wrapped up in the fun, sexy idea. And I find that it's often the really annoying little problems that make the best opportunities for innovation. There's a company called Telesense that developed a grain monitor to tell you if there's moisture or other kinds of problems that might lead to spoilage. And it sounds so benign, but for farmers, understanding, having that remote sensor always watching your grain for you is a huge relief.
Wow. Yeah. Lauren Stein with us. She raises cattle, sheep, and goats on her farm in Arkansas. She writes about farm technology for Ag Funder News. We're looking at how the farm industry is changing with tech. Are you in farming? What technological innovations have you found most useful? What have given you the most headaches? What technology have you invested in on your farm, and what is it doing for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Lauren, what is it like for farmers to have to sift through all this new technology, new information, make decisions about their crops and animals, and figure out what really can be automated and what they have to do manually?
It's exhausting, as far as I can tell. And even from my own personal experience, whenever I've considered different innovations, it's really exhausting. And it's a huge financial investment. And not only that, it's a time investment. We only get so many seasons every year. And if you take a gamble on new technology, it could affect the outcome of your season. And when it comes to new crop inputs, there's lots of exciting things going on with microbes and different kinds of biological inputs. Testing out a new chemical, whether you're doing it on a small sample acreage or your entire acreage, you know, that could essentially ruin your harvest. Or maybe you have a great experience and it boosts it substantially. So it's kind of like rolling the dice in a way. And there's some farmers who are very good at doing their research and they can make time. But a lot of other farmers just simply don't have time to sit down, go to all these companies' websites, ask questions, see if they can get some kind of demo or trial and commit to it.
Yeah, your bottom line is really vulnerable here. The technology could be make or break for you and your farm, and one wrong move could really affect your yields.
That's right. And it's something that I think comes up with equipment, any type of hardware. And I had one farmer tell me once that he only needs a particular machine to work 3 days out of the year. And if he goes out there and it doesn't work those 3 days out of the year, then it ruins his entire season. And so the risk factor is really high. And I think that's why we see some farmers not super keen to adopt technology. They're waiting for those first adopters to work out a lot of the kinks before they see whether the value proposition is really there. And I think that's something that Silicon Valley and these entrepreneurs need to understand is that, you know, it's not like I use some technology every single day or that if it doesn't work that day, I can figure something else out. That's not always the case. You know, if I'm relying on some cutting edge electric tractor and I can't get it to work, or more importantly, I can't get a hold of customer service to figure it out on that Sunday
Saturday,
at 7 a.m.
Right. On that Sunday or on that Saturday, and your dashboard is dark. What do you do?
Yeah, you're in a tough spot.
Yeah. And, you know, manufacturers have been really pushing this right to repair movement, you know, to make manufacturers to make their parts and their tools, their information available so that it's not just them who can fix it. How active is that right to repair movement among farmers?
You know, I haven't heard a whole lot about that, and it's something that I'd be very curious to know more about from farmers. And, you know, when farmers contact me, they can certainly contact me off the record and keep things discreet between us, because I know some of us don't really like to talk poorly about certain companies. But I've been curious to see how that's actually playing out, and I haven't been able to get a good sense of that.
Farmer Lauren Stein taking us on a tour of farm tech, robotic advancements on the farm. Do you stress about trying to keep up with the latest technology on your farm? Is it becoming too expensive and hard to maintain farm implements? Have you been able to get that tech support at that critical time, Sunday at 7 a.m. for your combine? Do you trust your farm data management system that it won't crash? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Lauren Stein. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing how tech has modernized farming and where farm automation is headed. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Farmers have new tools to help them meet the demands of our world's ever-growing population. So drones can be used to monitor crop conditions. They may even apply treatments like fertilizers. Massive combines are tricked out with GPS, lasers, computer vision, machine learning, and sensors to be more efficient. How important is tech to your farm operations? What have you adopted on your farm? Are your machines harvesting grain and data at the same time? Join in 800-642-1234. Farmer Lauren Stein is a contributing writer for the trade journal Ag Funder News, and she's our guide. So, Lauren, you know, a lot of these apps you're saying get developed in Silicon Valley. How much of a disconnect is that? Are these developers actually farmers or know what it is like to be a farmer when they develop these tools?
Yeah, that's an issue that we saw quite a bit of a few years ago. And I think there's an awakening among entrepreneurs and tech developers and venture capitalists that the end user needs to play a role in developing the technology instead of just creating something and handing it to farmers and saying, don't you love what we made you? And where I see this play out quite significantly is in the realization that the person who's ultimately going to use the technology is often not the person who owns the farming operation. A lot of times it's hired hands, hired labor. You might have someone who does not speak English as a first language. And there's a growing awareness among these companies that, you know, maybe we need to offer our app in Spanish as well and not just in English.
You gave an example of an app that helps farmers figure out the best time to sell grain so they can maximize profits. And certainly with so many farms here in Wisconsin facing bankruptcy or facing really difficult times, what is some technology that help farmers gauge the market?
Yeah, the digital marketplaces are a really exciting space. There's a lot of activity there, and they're interesting because they sort of buck against the traditional agricultural model. And largely what they seek to do is cut out the middlemen or to give farmers the same information that those middlemen would probably have. The one you referenced is called Bushel, and farmers can use it for free. It's the grain companies that pay for it. And they give the farmers information about pricing. You can get your scale tickets. You can digitally sign your contracts. And you can get paid more quickly. There's other digital marketplaces for things like farm equipment auctions. Tractor Zoom is one that does that. Or if you're looking for a new piece of equipment and you know exactly what you want, you can go on their website and essentially hunt for it. And that service will try and find this piece of equipment at an auction for you. Farmers Business Network has done some interesting work trying to help farmers get better prices for crop inputs. They're trying to take some of the mystery out of why input prices fluctuate. And they have an anonymous platform where you go on and you put your receipts in for what you paid for all your crop inputs. And it matches it with other people in your area to figure out, are you getting the best price? So some of these tools are nice in a sense that you can go in at night or maybe on your lunch break and look at, you know, your computer or on your phone and scan for information. And it's not something that's a huge, huge financial investment, but it could end up saving you some money.
Talking with Lauren Stein, who raises cattle, sheep, and goats on her farm in Arkansas. She also writes about technology for Ag Funder News and other publications. We're looking at the future of farming and what tech has to do with it. Has technology made dairy farming more efficient and further driven down the price of milk? What negative consequences do you see technology causing in agriculture? What has it done for you by leaps and bounds, changed how you do your work each day on the farm? 800-642-1234. Lauren, there's another company, Numbnuts, that you reference, and I was looking at Numbnuts and its offerings. Its tagline, because you'd feel it, E-W-E apostrophe D. Can you explain what Numbnuts does?
Yeah, Numbnuts is interesting. It sort of wraps together castration and tail docking, and it adds a little bit of a numbing agent. I think they use a lidocaine-based component to try and numb the area a little bit. But tail docking and castration is something that's pretty frequent if you raise sheep or goats or any kind of small ruminant. So it's a tedious process and there is a little bit of pain involved with it. And again, this is one of those examples of a really annoying little problem that makes a great opportunity for innovation. And so they created this handheld device that administers the shot of numbing agent and takes care of banding to achieve the castration all in one.
Oh, okay. Have you tried this?
I have not. It's something that I'm interested in. I'm curious about, but I'm a relatively small farmer, and the small farmer piece of agriculture technology is interesting because for a lot of these operations, unless you have a pretty sizable scale, the investment in the technology may not always pay for itself if you don't have a large enough production.
Yeah. And so sometimes then that might make it more difficult for family farms, smaller farms, to get in on these advancements and maybe keep doing the farming the way it's been done in past generations.
Right. And I see this quite a bit with dairy. There are many, many different dairy technologies out there. Dairy has been one of the most innovative sectors of agriculture. But these technologies are pretty expensive, or there's a lot of time associated with getting the technology up and running, or you have to train so many different staff members, or you have to retrain your dairy cows on a different process for milking. So it is something to consider, and I like to ask startups on occasion, you know, how do you cater to smaller farmers? Do you cater to smaller farmers? What role do they play in how you develop your technology?
Well, let's talk about dairy farming. Robotic milking machines have been really growing in Europe for years. They have had slower takeoff here in the States. What do you see out of robotic milking?
Robotic milking, I see a little bit of interest here in the U.S., but I think since that technology is so well developed overseas that some U.S. startups may be a little bit hesitant to compete in that space. There are quite a few other technologies for dairy that are pretty interesting. There's a company called Canthus in Ireland that is using computer vision and predictive imaging to monitor cow health. So it takes a picture of the cow using different types of imaging, and it can identify those subclinical signs of impending disease before the farmer's eye can. And that's really interesting. And the install is relatively easy. It's just a few camera sensors that you pop up in your milking barn. And it's a silent eye up in the sky constantly watching your herd for you.
Wow. So there are sensors, then these cameras looking down at the cows, and you can actually see some variation or some issues cropping up that would affect that you would need to go tend to that cow?
Yes. And the way that they identify each cow, you know, cows to us sometimes look all the same, but the computer vision eye is so sensitive that it can tell nuances in maybe the spotted pattern on the cow or the position of her face or different facial features. So it can identify each cow and tell you exactly which one might have an elevated temperature, who might not be moving that fast. It's a really interesting technology.
When you're talking about training the cattle on how to use this new technology, how does that work?
Well, if you have to hang the sensor in a new place and you need the cattle to start walking through a different doorway into the milking parlor, you know, dairy cows get into their routines and they know what the deal is every single day. And so if all of a sudden they have to walk through a different door, it might take you a few days to get everyone on the right page. It's nothing that can't be overcome. But certainly if you install a robotic milking parlor, then that's going to take the cows a little bit of getting used to.
Because they go up to the robotic milking parlor on their own. They do that on their own. Is that right?
That's right, with a lot of the systems. And, you know, there's different noises, different sounds. They've got to walk on a metal surface maybe. And dairy cows are pretty desensitized to a lot of that stuff. But it could be a weird experience for them that they need someone to sort of guide them through until they understand what's happening.
You know, the dairy industry has been so dependent on migrant farm laborers, the migrant farm workers. Could that impede applying this new technology on the farm?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, sometimes these companies don't always think about who the actual end user is. Just because the farm owner is buying and paying for the technology and is listed as the owner of the technology, it may not be the person who's using it on a day-to-day basis. And so I've had some farmers tell me that training their entire staff on a new technology can be a massive headache. And if you have situations where maybe your farm laborers are not completely fluent in English and they have to read a manual or call customer service or something like that, you can get into some pretty serious problems. So it is something I think a lot of farmers consider.
You know, how often do farmers try it and then maybe bail on it saying this is just not working? Is there a recourse or do farmers have to be all in?
I wish I knew, and that's something that I try and get more statistics from farmers about, even just anecdotal information. And people can email me anytime. It's lauren@agfunder.com. I love anecdotal stories about technology. And I wish I knew, did you go through all the hassle of installing this new technology, getting familiar, paying for it, only to decide that it simply didn't bring you the value you thought it would?
Because then you have to either go back to how you were doing things or maybe try to invest in another technology and try something new. And, time is money. There's a lot of resources going into it.
There are. And I think the way that farmers are navigating this today is word of mouth. And, we all talk to each other, we all ask each other questions. And I think farmers are very curious as to what their neighbors are doing when it comes to technology. And that's how they're getting a lot of their information. If we go to a company's website, that company's only going to say amazing things about their technology. But your neighbor might know someone who knows someone who used it, or they might have used it themselves. And you can get more of a transparent discussion about what that technology might do for you.
Looking at how tech is changing farm practices with Lauren Stein. She raises cattle, sheep, and goats in Arkansas. Has technology made dairy farming more efficient or not? What disruptors do you see tech causing in agriculture? Are your milking parlors robotic or semi-robotic, holding down labor costs? Is tech the future of farming? Be part of this hour, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Lauren Stein on high-tech farming after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're talking about high-tech farm implements and what the future holds for data-driven crop and livestock management. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. According to the USDA's Cooperative Extension, more than 35,000 robotic milking systems are used on dairy farms around the world. It's a voluntary milking system for cows. Do you rely on robotic milking on your dairy? How does it do for production? What apps or tech on your farm have been a game changer in recent years? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. We have Arkansas farmer Lauren Stein, writes for the trade journal Ag Funder News, other publications as well, and raises cattle, sheep, and goats. She's our guide for this hour. Lauren, I want to talk about drones. There's so much going on in the area on drones and how they have changed agriculture. What is your take on them?
Yeah, drones were an exciting space. About 2016, there was a lot of promise and a lot of hype, probably. And I've not really covered a lot of drone startup stories in recent years, if that tells you anything. I think drones were an exciting idea. But some of the practical applications and some of the regulations around drone use made achieving those possibilities a bit difficult. For example, according to federal regulations, when you're flying a drone, you have to keep it in your visual line of sight. And this can limit how much you're using that drone. It may mean you can't fly your entire acreage. So a lot of farmers were a bit hesitant because of that rule. And there's also just the practicalities of owning a drone. It's a high-tech machine. You have to learn how to fly it. You have to learn how to maintain it. And there were also some issues around battery life. Some farmers felt like the batteries weren't lasting as long as they should, and they weren't getting the flight times that they wanted to get. There's still a few players in the drone space. Precision Hawk is one. They do AI-powered aerial data analytics. And Drone Deploy is still working a little bit in the space, but as far as I can tell, they're somewhat pivoting into new industries. So it's still an interesting idea. And you'll see agronomists use drones, and they provide drones as a service to some of their farmer clients, where they can come out with their drone, fly over the fields, take lots of hyperspectral imaging to try and figure out crop health. And it is an interesting service. But I think we're going to primarily see it continue to be used as a service, because this way there's an expert who's interpreting the imagery, maintaining the drone. They have their certification to fly the drone, and the farmer just gets the benefit of what the drone can do.
Right. So they kind of, that's more of an outsourced service, if you will, and pay for that service when you want it or need it. What is aerial powered data analytics? What are they looking for?
Yeah, so it's AI-powered aerial data analytics, and it's a mouthful, especially early in the morning. And what it's essentially doing, that drone's flying over your field, and it's taking lots of different pictures, essentially, to put it really simply. And it's using different lenses, different cameras to take those pictures. And what you get back is a picture of your field with lots of different colors, red, yellow, green, all kinds of different colors on it. It's really hard to understand if you don't know what you're looking at. And it can tell you where there's the most stress, where there's drought, where it's growing well, what the heat is. There's lots of information that can be gleaned from that hyperspectral imaging. But again, it's something that a lot of farmers don't want to sit down and learn. And I certainly can't blame them. You know, we have enough already on our plates that we're trying to contend with. And so trying to become a data scientist at night, when you're done farming for the day, is not always a really attractive proposition for farmers. But an agronomist can spend the time and invest the money in really understanding how to get the most value out of what that drone and its imagery capabilities have to offer.
See, you know, I would take those images and then frame them for my family room, right, on the farm.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect.
But, you know, so the family farmers are using the drones. They're paying for the service from the company, and maybe having to pay a lot. What are the costs for flying a drone that you don't own?
Well, the agronomist is the one who owns it. So the agronomist will come out with his or her drone and fly it over your field and then give you the results and tell you what it means and wrap it into a larger package of advice for you. You know, drones run the gamut. You can get a small drone, believe it or not, from Best Buy that's not a whole lot of money. More high-tech drones or larger drones that are able to carry things that have a payload capacity, those might run you a little bit more. And the companies, not surprisingly, are always a little bit hesitant to tell you what it might cost because they don't want you to shy away from the value that it might be able to add for you.
Yeah, so those drones could be dropping fertilizer. They could be dropping pesticides. Do you see that at all in that space?
I haven't seen that a whole lot. There's a handful of companies that are working on it. There's one in Israel that's actually trying to crack the whole problem of payload capacity for drones. But again, when we get to our visual line of sight issue, you have to keep that drone where you can see it. And so if you're using it to apply inputs on all of your acreage, you're essentially walking with the drone to keep it in your visual line of sight. So there's some practical issues there that I think we're still working on.
So we're still going to be seeing crop dusters on the near term, at least.
I think so.
Yeah. We're talking with Lauren Stein, raises cattle, sheep, and goats on our farm in Arkansas. She also writes about technology for Ag Funder News, other publications. We're looking at the future of farming, what technology holds, and how technology has changed your farm. What are you using now that you would recommend to other farmers? What different apps do you think are, you know, just not what they are intended to do? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Lauren, looking at that space of what family farms are outsourcing today, what tech they're outsourcing or paying for that they don't actually use or implement from their own farm, what is that space like?
Thanks to the pandemic, I think we're seeing some really interesting stuff happening in terms of connecting small farmers to new markets. And there's a company called Steward, S-T-E-W-A-R-D, that helps connect small diversified farming operations with capital, with working capital and investment in some cases for real estate purchases. We're also seeing some platforms that are trying to help farmers manage different farmers markets or an online store or a pickup point that they might run. When you talk to a lot of small farmers who sell directly to consumers, one of their biggest pain points is trying to manage the business side of things. And, you know, most farmers don't get into farming because they want to run, you know, a direct to consumer sales business. They want to do the farming side of things. So I think there's a really eager interest among them to see what these technologies might be able to offer. Can you connect me to a new market? Can you streamline the orders I get at my farmer's market so that I don't spend 7 hours every Friday night trying to pack all these orders or figure out what I should bring? And those are really interesting. And I'd like to talk to more farmers who are using those services to see what's working and maybe what's not working.
Yeah, because, you know, in the pandemic, they've seen the food chain, the global food chain has been hugely disrupted. And so actually having farmers be able to get their, you know, all of their products to market has been really difficult. And now they have to be able to connect with their customers and find and create those markets and find those markets. And I'm thinking even the piece of doing that and all of the marketing that comes with that and building the websites, that would be very difficult.
Yeah. And it's intimidating for some farmers who just aren't tech savvy and don't want to be tech savvy. And Steward's also doing a program through COVID-19 where they're helping a lot of farmers onboard. They're helping you build your online store, helping you figure out which service might be right for you. There's a lot of different ones. I think, GrazeCart is one. I think Barn to Door is another one. Don't quote me on that, but I think Barn to Door offers this kind of online store for farmers service. And it's a lot of work on the upfront, putting in all your products, all your prices, getting nice pictures, because you do want your website to look good. But once you have it, it's there. And so I'm interested to see how many farmers stick with their digital offerings or digital marketing even after the pandemic winds down.
Yeah, when we come on the other side of this pandemic, will they keep that through line going? Because now they've established it, will they keep that going after the pandemic?
That's right. And, you know, through a lot of grocery and restaurant retail technology, consumers are so used to ordering everything online. And the biggest thing that consumers seek time and time again through every study we've seen is convenience. They want things to be as convenient as possible. So I think once you've trained your consumers this very convenient platform where they can go on and order meat and vegetables or cheese or whatever that you have to offer, they're not necessarily going to want to go back to maybe an older non-digital type of ordering methodology.
Yeah, but they will certainly keep up those practices because we are all creatures of habit, right?
Yes, absolutely. I know I am. Yeah. So once you get used to ordering something a certain way, the idea of having to change that can be a little bit of a disincentive to keep purchasing from that person.
Yeah. And, you know, once you start to know your farmer a little bit too, you might be able to develop some relationships there, or at least feel more connection and more loyalty, if you will, to that particular farmer and their products.
That's right. And I think a lot of farmers are discouraged right now, especially if they farm or they sell at a farmer's market, because that's where they do all of their hustling, right? That's where you talk to people and sell your farm, sell your story. And the only real outlet that they have to turn to now to do that is social media. And so there's tons and tons of farms that have this growing social media presence where they're trying to connect with consumers. And once you have an online store or digital ordering platform, it's really easy to integrate that with your social media account so that someone's scrolling through Facebook or Instagram, they stumble upon your farm, they see these beautiful pictures, your smiling faces, your gorgeous farm property, and then they can just tap a few clicks and order from you. And it's really seamless.
Yeah, certainly you get that seamless ability to do that. And in these pandemic times when it's really difficult to keep that farm going, I would imagine that these types of apps could be the one, you know, game changer, the lifesaver for the bottom line.
I think so. I think they're not going to go away anytime soon. And like I said, once you get consumers, once you give them a dose of that convenience, they're not going to want you to take it away from them.
Arkansas farmer Lauren Stein taking us on a tour of farm tech, robotic advancements, what the pandemic means in all of this, with data management practices. Are you a farmer? What technological innovations have you found most useful on your farm, and which ones have been the biggest headaches? What tech have you invested in, and is it worth it? Or is it another piece of machinery to break and you need tech support on the weekend? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Lauren Stein here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with farmer Lauren Stein. Farmers generate a massive amount of data, and it can be captured and used to provide extra value on the farm, as we've been talking about. But it does come with a cost. John Deere debuted its connected combine harvester last year at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. It told Voice of America that the extra electronics add about $10,000 to the cost of the combine, which costs in the neighborhood of $500,000. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jan, who's joining us from Oak Creek this morning. Hi, Jan.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What would you like to add about tech and farming?
Well, I'm not a farmer, but I learned a lot from watching YouTube. I watch several farmers on there. They have daily vlogs, and one of them is called Cole the Corn Star, and he's from central Iowa. He does soybeans and corn, and he has more than probably 800 acres, if not more. And he just got done showing how his combines worked and how they worked with tech and stuff. And it was, I found it eye-opening to me because I didn't realize how much tech can be used. He uses GPS and everything. And he just, yesterday he showed how he had printouts of soil tests that were done on all his fields, so that he could know how much lime to put on them and other. It was very, very, it's very, very interesting, very technical, but he's very smart and he's very tech savvy because he's like 23 or 24.
Jan, thank you for that. Lauren, you know, Cole the Corn Star is really these YouTubers sucking Jan in and really getting her to think differently about what is in that combine.
Yeah, it's a new phenomenon we're seeing called Chore TV. And there's lots of farmers who are now making revenue from a YouTube channel. And all they're really doing is providing a day-to-day snapshot. And you can find so many of these accounts on Instagram. And people love them. Some of these accounts have 50,000 followers, if not more, where all they do is post behind the scenes, day-to-day. Here's what's happening on the farm. Here's new babies being born. Or even some of the struggles of farming. You know, here's what happens when we have a significant weather event. And I think it's doing a lot to break down some of that urban-rural divide and reconnect consumers with, you know, what is it like to be a farmer? How is my food grown? What goes into that?
Lauren, get your babies out there.
They are. I'm on Instagram. Yeah, and during kidding season, it's pretty fun time because there's just baby goats hopping around everywhere.
Oh, that's so neat. And that's really fascinating that transparency and bridging that divide between urban and rural. Another big divide between urban and rural is broadband internet access. Rural areas, especially here in Wisconsin, struggle to get broadband. How much of a hurdle is this for farms that are trying to adapt and use this new technology?
Oh, it's a non-starter for a lot of folks. And digital broadband is kind of the digital elephant in the room, I like to say, with a lot of these startups. They just don't like to think about that because there's not a lot that they can really do to change the broadband situation. I think I have seen a few companies try and innovate solutions for hotspots or trying to create little Wi-Fi hot pockets for farmers. But essentially, if you don't have reliable internet, you're not going to invest in all this really expensive technology. And, you know, it's something that is loosely talked about in the background. But until we have more of a concerted effort from, you know, the federal administration, it's probably going to continue to be a problem.
A lot of tech startups are located on the coast. Are there some startups located here in the heartland? And do they tend to focus on agriculture?
Yes, there's a few ag tech hotspots. St. Louis is one. St. Louis has a lot of livestock technology and animal agriculture innovation. Kansas City is another. Indiana is doing a lot. Agrinovis is a public entity in Indiana that's really focused on biosciences and connecting them with agriculture. So we are seeing a lot more interest in the Midwest and even in the South. Research Triangle Park in North Carolina does a lot with agriculture technology. So there might be some innovation centers closer to you than you think. It doesn't necessarily have to just be in Silicon Valley.
So you have to reveal who is your sidekick with you this morning. Who's scurrying about?
Yeah, I've got two huge German Shepherds in my office. I told them they need to lay down. Then I've got a Border Collie and three Livestock Guardian dogs laying on my porch right now. And so it's a miracle no one's barked.
Oh, that is so sweet. They're all over. They're all around you. I love it. So, yeah, they're making their radio debut. And who knew, right?
That's right.
Farmer Lauren Stein, a contributing writer for the trade journal Ag Funder News, looks at how technology is changing farming in America. Still time to talk about what tech you're using on your farm, what you're learning about how combines have changed dramatically and cost dramatically different in this day and age. 800-642-1234. Lauren, I've just found it staggering the cost, the retail cost of combines. How are family farms affording this technology?
Financing. Yeah. The same financing opportunities that they've had for a while. And, you know, I think farmers just live with a lot of debt, and it's just something they've gotten used to.
May I ask, did you buy your farm outright or did you inherit it? What was your situation when you became a farmer?
Yeah, I'm actually a first generation farmer, and I bought my farm, and, you know, I use the FSA beginning farmer loan program, which was huge. You know, down payments are not small when you're talking about decent acreage. And so I use that program, which if you've farmed for at least 3 years, and by that they mean show that you've been involved in making day-to-day management decisions in another operation, they will pay your down payment for you and they'll assist you with a lot of that financing. So that was huge for me and allowed me to get on a farm. And the way I got that managerial experience is by working on another farm. I found these really fantastic mentors that have taught me everything I need to know, and we're still connected, and I sell meat through their business now. And so it was a really, really lucky situation for me to fall into as a first generation farmer.
As a first generation farmer, I've noticed in our conversation here that you have side hustles. You have other things you're doing besides farming. Can a farmer make it just on farming alone?
That's the big question, right? I think most of us would love to quit our day jobs and just farm all day. But, you know, even if I could make it work financially, I think having some of the financial security, just different income streams, is nice. If I have some kind of cataclysmic weather event or something happens on the farm, I know that I still have a little bit of income, not only to support myself, but to, you know, keep the farm going. So I think for a lot of us, it's a safety net that helps us feel a little bit better about some of the risks we take on our operations.
Yeah, safety net. Let's bring in Todd in Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. You want to talk about John Deere?
Yeah, I just joined the conversation, but just across my social media last night, I found a video that talked about how John Deere wasn't letting the farmers, or hasn't been for a while, actually repairing their own equipment, and they're kind of coming from the angle of, our software is really complicated, and they're really monetizing that whole we're going to repair it, you can't repair it thing. And I heard a lot of the litigation. They're actually partnering with big tech companies like Apple, because obviously Apple is sort of in the same boat where you can't repair our stuff because the licensing is really complicated, and they monetize that whole situation. So I just found that very interesting. I thought it sort of tied into the conversation this morning.
Yeah, Todd, thank you. Lauren, is that on your radar? I know we talked about the right to repair movement earlier, but what do you see?
Yeah, it's definitely on my radar. You know, what's hard as a journalist is to cover this or to get information about it. I have to have someone willing to go on the record. And so it's hard to find farmers sometimes that want to open up and share what their experiences have been. I think the litigation is going to reveal a lot for us. And it's going to tell us, you know, what maybe the real motivations are. Is it simply an issue of the technology being too complicated, or are there some different motivations going on for this policy?
Yeah. Go ahead.
If there's one thing I've learned, you know, farmers don't have a really high tolerance for stuff. We had a situation a while ago where a startup called Tillable found itself in some trouble over its technology, and farmers on Twitter all started saying, hey, we're not really sure if we are comfortable with this. Tillable does land sales, and they'll aggregate lots of public data and try and help you figure out what land might be worth so that you can buy it or sell it. And there's this whole issue on Twitter of all these farmers saying, we don't like this. We think this is kind of sketchy. And so I think even if there are some ulterior motives, farmers aren't going to tolerate that for very long.
Lauren, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, this was really fun. Thank you for having me.
Lauren Stein, contributing writer for the trade journal Ag Funder News, farmer raising cattle, sheep, and goats in Northwest Arkansas. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.